Good evening, anglers.
Welcome to Hooked on Fly Fishing. I'm Colin Shepherd, and it's Friday, the 21st of December. Hooked on Fly Fishing is proudly supported by Rod and Reel Tackle Newmarket. They have the biggest range of fly fishing and fly tying gear in New Zealand. Have a look at their website, rodandreel.co.nz. On tonight's show, we replay an interview with Matthew von Sturmer. Matthew tells us about fishing in Christmas Island, Kiribati.
Now, Matthew von Sturmer is a saltwater fly fisherman. He's absolutely saltwater obsessed. He's the captain of a charter boat operation based on Waiheke here in Auckland. And he's mad keen on the saltwater fly. He enjoys fly tying and talking about the sport that he loves. And that's why we want to talk to him. Matthew's live on here with us now. Good evening, Matthew.
Good evening, Colin.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, I've come back to Earth after a spectacular trip to Christmas Island and paying my due punishment of some orders and jobs I need to complete and family I need to catch up with and friends who are, you know, jealous and...
Yeah, and people
who want to, twisted.
And people who want to talk to you on the air about how it all went. Now, tell us about the location. You're right up there on the equator, Matthew.
Yeah, so it's very very North Pacific, really between Fiji and Hawaii, the Line Islands, Marshall Islands, so there's a whole bunch of different names, but it was complete new territory for me. In fact, I really need to do some research myself about where I've just been, because I really don't know a lot about it. And fascinating history of Christmas Island itself, because of course it was where the Americans shunted out the local population in the 50s and 40s and 50s and the British, and tested some nuclear bombs.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, so it's sort of the island itself, very low-lying, and the local people, you know, are definitely have issues with global sea level rising and so forth. And, I mean, just to jump to the fishing, very interesting scenario where one flight in the morning on a Friday and one in the afternoon just on a Friday, and it's the dominant number of passengers are fly fishermen coming and going. Six or seven fly fishing operations on the island, and being a fly fishing guide is probably the best job, and saltwater fly fishing is probably the biggest employer.
Okay, now did you go as a group or an individual, or just a bunch of mates?
Yeah, so we did a group, and it's a great way to go, you know, with such an interesting new territory to sort of tag along, which is what I did on a group. This was organised by Gary Kingsley, who's been before.
Yes.
So you get all that security. Gary sent out screeds of emails beforehand, prepping us all, and I must... the joke was that I didn't read any of them, so I must now reread them, having gone. I was just so busy and sort of thought, no, well, I'll sit down and go through them, and of course I never did it, and I missed the vital one, which is where I met him at the airport, Auckland Airport, on the day. So they were waiting for me in one location, and I was waiting. But it all worked out. But, you know, we had camp mother, tour leader, who sort of paved the way. And we had a few, it was a mixed trip, which, you know, mixed group. And I always enjoy that. I always enjoy, you know, a random bunch of individuals on a fishing trip. And you would probably, you know, not necessarily come across people. And then you're stuck with them for a week. And it's always fun and fascinating. Working all that out. But the days were very, followed a sort of strict regime. Breakfast at 6 a.m. And the previous night we would have discussed with the head guide what we wanted to do for the day, and he would have on the whiteboard allocated boats and guides to the various activities. And so we had a couple of spin fishers among us. We had one guy who really just wanted to chill out and had a lot of fun actually just going to the local wharf. But it's not a wharf as we would know it. This is a structure that comes out from Christmas Island, only a few hundred metres, but the end of the wharf is pretty close to the continental shelf. So just a few weeks before, a sailfish was landed by one of the locals, and there's GTs and giant bluefin crashing bait below, and you know, quite remarkable activity in the seas there, manta rays and all sorts of stuff.
Okay, now, in the group you talked about a mix of people. Was there a mix of experience? Are they not all experienced?
Yeah,
like
definitely, so there were some absolute first-time fly fishers, they went off and with guides who coached them into fishing that suited their level of experience. And it's a sort of place where you could do whatever you like. So you could park yourself up on a drop-off on a flat, cast weighted flies into the drop-off and catch, you know, numerous species and really get an introduction. There was a guy, Rick, who caught a 10-pound bone on a lure. Whereas myself and you might know Stratos.
Stratocotsalanus.
So he was my room buddy, and that was a real bonus getting to know him. And we're built the same way, so you know we're of that ilk. If they took a brain scan, there would be a fish skeleton in our head. So he fished every available hour, as did I. And we were the two old men of the group, and we'd be asleep. I was the older man of the group, so he would often stay up later than I would, but I'd be asleep by 9 o'clock. We just fished, you know, hard out as much as we could, and we got to dictate, you know, the guides that we fished with and what we did and where we went, and the two of us had a great time. So we mixed it up with a few of the other group at certain times, but you're given this wonderful opportunity where you have a boatman. He'll take a guide and a couple of guests, or two guides and two guests each, and he'll basically plonk you on one of the flats, and there's numerous flats within the lagoon. Fantastic deep history of American fly fishers visiting Christmas Island. So all the flats are named by the Americans. So we'd fish either Smoky Flat, or we'd go into the back country, or and you'd just fish the tides, and the guys would be in contact by radio, and you'd get to walk as far as you like fishing, and then your boatman would pick you up or relocate you. So the guides were very skilled at knowing which flats were best on which tides. Countless bonefish. So you're walking in extremely shallow water on top of the flats, and just coming across incredible amounts of bonefish. So, I personally caught something like, well, being dyslexic, I can't remember whether it was 87 or 78. But, you know, 100 bonefish in a week is very, very achievable. But what interested me was there are bigger bonefish there. They're tricky. And so I was passing by lots of bonefish shots and going for those tailing bonefish that were slightly larger size, and loving that trigger fish. You know, that's a whole fantastic obsession in itself. So, there's a lot of guys who've decided that trigger fish on the flats are a really worthy species, and I can certainly see why.
Okay. Now, let's look at the weather. What sort of temperatures do you get up there?
Yeah, it was extremely comfortable for us, so 28 to 30, but it was dry heat. Obviously, it gets, you know, wetter and hotter, but it was just extremely pleasant. We had a persistent trade wind. Some of the guys in the group complained about the wind, but you know, being a diehard salt fly fisherman, you just deal with the wind and you cast accordingly. And the guides are particularly good at always finding places that, you know, you can fish one side or the other, depending on what you want to do. So personally, I found that there was, you know, the weather was fantastic. And in fact, you're fishing so shallow for bonefish, there's some of those, you know, days where you've got a slight sort of riffle on the water. It's not a bad thing.
It's probably good, yes. It just shields it from the fish. Yeah, I understand. Now, some people moan about the cloud. You can get very clear days, but then the cloud can come in and clag it all up. Once again, that's not a problem,
is it? Yeah, so we had a few cloudy days. I mean, we had one of those, we had a particular morning where there was one cloud, and it just blocked the sun pretty much wherever we went. But, you know, my guide was on the phone or on the radio and shifted us around a couple of times. And, you know, the nature of the place is such that what you then did is you decided just to target the tailing bonefish when the light wasn't so good for spotting. And the other thing is the triggerfish are quite visible. They're a fantastic species. So I had a lot of fun, very steep learning curve, worked out a lot of things and hooked more than I landed, but I landed a couple. But they're quite visible, quite tricky customers, a lot of small trevallies, and I put a bit of time in to use my good kingfish instincts and nail a nice 30-pound GT wading on my own, which was quite a cool fish.
Is that the one I've seen on video on Facebook, Matthew?
Yeah, a little bit of video of me releasing it, but you know, that was the case of basically letting my guide walk ahead with the other client, and I just stood in one spot for 2 hours, basically. Just as I say, my kingfish instincts told me at a certain point in the tide, some shit was going to go down, and excuse my language. And it did, you know, the classic scenario, a little, you know, backheady bait fish started to gather, and I could just see as the tide was going to fill in, the reef, the water would flow over the reef and into this lagoon, because it's really like a whole series of pools inside the lagoon.
Yeah.
So you've got water coming in from all directions. And I was left alone there for some time, and my guide started to get worried and made his way back towards me, thinking maybe I was going to get stuck. But I was just waiting for that critical moment when, such as our kingfish do, you know, they wait till the water really starts moving, but there's still a bit of structure. And sure enough, you know, all chaos ensued, and I had GTs crashing around my feet, laid a good cast, hooked a you know, 30-pounder, which was fantastic. But while I was fighting that fish, one that was probably twice the size came in under my line and smashed bait at my feet. So, you know, it would be great fishing to do with a buddy, but you'd have to sort of be on the same page where you'd really just sort of stake it out, ready for that one shot. But no, it was quite a cool fish.
Okay, now let's talk about the gear that you used. What sort of rods do you take with you?
So I had a lot of fun fishing 7 and 8 weights for bonefish. I got to fish a Sage X rod, which basically I think the hype is true. They're, you know, stunning piece of equipment, and really enjoyed that. And the interesting thing was that I had 7s and 9s myself, but picked up an X 8 weight without an 8 weight line. So in fact, I fished it with both 9 and 7 weight lines. But there's a Rio 7 weight bonefish quick shooter line, which is, you know, relatively heavy head, which is the quick shooting element, so you can punch it into the wind.
Yes.
And it fished on the 8 weight X just beautifully. So I'm very keen to fish an 8 weight line and see how that goes. But, you know, you've got to, I think, with this whole business of lines and rod weights and so forth, you've really got to play around and find what works in different situations. Whereas there were other days when the quick shooter, being a heavy head, really felt like the wrong line, and I went back to fishing my 7 weight with a 7 weight bonefish line, which is a much more even taper, and that's really just an indication of the shallow water spookiness of the fish, and you want that line to, you know, delicate presentation. So, and you know, in many ways, that's you know, what we crave is that sort of semi-technical fishing where presentation, getting the fly to turn over, and hopefully not spooking the fish is what it's all about.
Okay, I understand. Yes. Now, what about leaders and tippet material? What sort of breaking strands you got there?
Yeah, so I had a bunch of the Rio, you know, integrated tips. So, you know, they'd go from 20 or 30 pound and they'd taper down to 20 or 16. So I found the 16 was really what I wanted to be using on the flats. And often I'd actually tie an extra, well, the guides would refer to feet thing, you know, so an extra 4 feet of sometimes 12 pound. And I should say, you know, in terms of flies, that most of the flies that I took were too big. And what I really wanted was size 6 and 8 bead chain eyes, very light, very, very sparse. And they really worked on the shallow flats. Having said that, I had a saltwater fly workshop bastard shrimp fly, much, much bigger, with a bead chain eye. And whenever I hit sort of a sandy flat that was perhaps knee-deep, I just didn't get a refusal. But what I needed to do was lead the fish by some distance. So I'd put the fly out, but, you know, it was just such a tasty morsel of probably a little mantis shrimp imitation that got snaffled. So, you know, lots of learning curves for me. Definitely would love to go back and put some of that in practice.
Okay, do you get many bust-offs around coral bombies or anything, rocks?
Yeah, lost some really nice fish. So, you know, bones over 4 pound are beginning to get big for Christmas Island. So I absolutely love fishing for bonefish and aitataki, and bonefish don't get big till they're sort of over 8 pound there, and it's a different fishery that you know, you wouldn't say one's better than the other, but and on Christmas Island, I think you know, 4 pounds plus is big. I got a couple that were 7 to 8 pound. The bigger ones are there, but you know, you get I had one, let's say, you know, 7 or 8 pound bonefish tailing in water, you know, next to nothing, deep, over coral, and you throw your fly in, and you, if you haven't spooked, in this one I didn't spook, and it sort of accelerated on the fly, and I hooked up, and there was such a rooster tail of water coming off the fly line as this thing screamed across the flat. Just fantastic, you know, I mean, I just love that moment. And you know, before you know it, you're deep into your backing, and there's no exaggerating the bonefish thing. I mean, they move so fast, they're so strong, you know, and they're relatively small fish in comparison to tingies or GTs. Incredible. But, you know, lost that one on a second run because I had so much line out, and even though I had my rod high in the air, it just pinged me on a piece of coral. Yeah. So you spook a lot. You lose a lot, but there's ample shots. So yeah, very, very intense fishing.
Well, that brings up another question. You've got to be pretty much self-sufficient because there's no tackle stores you can run to or anything, is there?
No, there isn't. So you basically have to take everything and ensure that you've got backups. And you know, just as a side note, the local guys, you know, they've got no source of getting gear. So I did my best to leave as much of what I had there for the benefit of the local guides. I had a pair of wading boots that I've had a couple of good seasons out of. So that makes a big difference. In fact, one particular guide, you know, was talking about his son wanting to get into guiding, and So, that, you know, that was an interesting thing. So, you know, next time I go up, if I can afford to, I'll carry a little bit of extra gear and make sure I leave it behind.
Okay, well, what about this for an idea? Matthew von Sturmer's Tackle Supplies Christmas Island Kuribas. And you appoint me as a manager and I'll run it up there for you.
Sounds good, mate.
Just send
me an email of what you expect as a remuneration and we'll get going.
Okay, good. Yeah. Now, we talked about rides, flies, excellent, understand all that. Reels. Has you got to have a seal drag, a good quality reel?
Yeah, look. I just think the seal drag, there's no excuse these days. There's a lot of good quality reels that offer a sealed drag. So, you know, why would you bother with anything else? I'm fishing sage, and, you know, all of the sage reels that I fished, whether it was the 6000 saltwater series or in fact I've got some of Oaks and so forth, they were all superb. So okay. It makes a real difference. I mean, if you've got a 100 meter run at full speed, you just want to sit back and enjoy the drag singing, and equally, you know, you want to be able to put that rod down in a gritty, sandy environment, because of course the sand is coral based.
Yes.
So it's pretty unforgiving.
Okay.
And yeah, you just don't want your gear to fail. Okay. Good gear.
Now, bonefish are notoriously hard to spot. They're like a mirror sides, aren't they? Reflect the light. Did you find that after a couple of days you started picking up on them, or was it
really? Yeah, I find it really interesting. I mean, I've done two trips to Waitakere, and after a few days I was feeling pretty confident on Christmas Island, and I was spotting. In fact, I was slightly taller than most of my guides. So in fact, it became embarrassing because there were situations where I'd be pointing out bonefish before the guides. And as I say, I began to get really confident. And then the same thing happened, and they'd take me to a position, and the wind or the tide or something would be different. And suddenly, I just wouldn't be seeing bonefish that were, you know, 15, 20 feet in front of me. So it's a really interesting thing. I think the value is really spend your time, you know, really walk on the shoulder of your guide and you know, do everything they say. And then also take some time on your own, which if you're fishing one guide to two clients, there's a moment when your buddy goes with the guide and you just go and do your own thing. So okay. I think that's really valuable.
Okay. Do you need to hire a guide, or is it built into the package cost thing?
So most of the lodges will put a package together that includes, you know, your boat trip, your boatman, and guides, and you know, as I say, I've only had the one trip there, and we stayed at Ikari House, but there's various other Crystal Beach and various other places, and I think it's such a remote place that you just sort of basically pre-organise it so everything's set up, and all our meals were included, so there was really nothing for us to think about other than go fishing
and beer.
Yeah,
it sounds terrible, doesn't it? Now, proper clothing, sunburn, windburn, polarised glasses?
Oh, look, yeah, really good question. I as I say, didn't read all of Gary's emails. I didn't carefully pack as I had hoped to. So, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning of leaving, I threw everything in a bag. But what was very pleasing was that the gear that I did throw together was suited to the job. So the bag that I took, you know, it was a fish pond duffel, and I just, you know, it was robust and big enough to carry my rod. And, you know, I had, you know, good multi-rod tube. And then I think I had some Patagonia flats pants, quick drying, you know, 50 SPF UV, and the Reddington guide shirt, so, you know, they give you lots of sun protection. What you don't want to be doing is you know, be worrying about exposure to the sun. You just want to be out there all day. So that whole you know, fly fishing uniform of long pants, button-up shirts, all quick dry, and a buff and a hat. It makes a lot of sense. Very good quality sunglasses are an absolute must.
Okay, what's your favourite colour, amber or blue or what?
I'm a favourite of the amber colours. I mean, I had one backup pair but never used them, so I just stuck with my amber. But you know, it may make sense to have a couple of different colours, whether you went a rose sort of tint or an amber, possibly something darker for the really bright days. And I didn't even mention the milkfish.
Okay, tell us about milkfish here.
Well, the lots and lots of little milkfish in the lagoon, so you're constantly seeing milkfish and thinking they're bonefish. So I quickly worked out how to spot the difference. That was cool. But out in the open water, which we only did one morning, was actually start throwing some weed flies for the big milkfish. So these are just taking a guess here, like 10 kg milkfish, just sipping weed type stuff on the surface. We spoke to an Aussie angler who was leaving just as we arrived, and he did three mornings and landed two fish. The thing is, when you hook these things, they, 45 minute battle, they go aerial, they're incredible fighting fish. So that's just another whole project. And we had a little bit of debate as to the approach and flies and so forth. So, that along with the trigger fish just means there's quite a lot to think about beyond the obvious of bonefish and GTs.
Okay, that is excellent. Yeah, variety is the spice of life, as I say. Now, one thing that's intrigued me about the reading I've done on Christmas Island, some guides swear by the tides. How much importance do you put on fishing the right tides and timing your trip with the right tides and all that? Do you think it matters? Or is the fish there all day?
You're talking about moon phase, so yes. In terms of when guides go up?
Yes.
It depends what you're after. So there's a thing that I shouldn't talk about too much because it's one of these, the worst secrets of fly fishing. But, bonefish spawn monthly and so you can time a trip around the full moon and basically join the crowd fishing for a congregation of bonefish. But personally I would look at my calendar and those would be the dates that I'd avoid because that's not what I want to be doing. And I think like our local fishing is that what are you looking to do? And I would look for that sort of solitude on the flat. And whether it's high tide, low tide, full moon, new moon, I think what I love is finding the fishing and hunting and making good use of the opportunities. For instance, we landed on a flat and the cloud was wrong and the tide was too high for this particular flat. What we had though was a congregation of baitfish getting hammered by quite reasonable bluefin trevally.
Oh, nice!
And you need to sort of let the guides know that those are fish you want to catch. You're not completely obsessed with bonefish, and I can't think of a better way to spend a morning than standing in a knee deep or ankle deep flat trying to throw a fly at these lightning fast trevally hitting baitfish.
I understand totally.
Yeah.
Let's sum up. The water quality is good, Matthew?
Yeah, I mean, it's a small world and unfortunately us humans, we take all the same problems everywhere. So I hear that there are areas where there's a little bit of questionable water quality in the lagoons, perhaps they don't flush as well, and the infrastructure on the island is not what it should be. We didn't experience that, so as far as I could tell, where we were was just stunning. Manta rays, birds, fish, healthy. Just quite remarkable. And there's I made some contacts there that over the next few years, you know, I may even look at going to some of the islands further afield where you really get to fish areas that perhaps haven't seen fishermen before.
Okay, well, that would be sensational, yeah. Okay, so the fishing's good, Matthew. You're 100 bonefish a week, plus you've got milkfish and trevally, whatever. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I would thoroughly recommend it to anyone. Okay. It's quite a different experience. If you did want to compare it to Aitutaki, you know, my love affair for the South Pacific and Aitutaki is very strong. Quite a different experience. So I wouldn't want to choose between them. I would ideally want to keep going to both. But, you know, if you want to put a group together, in a sense, of, I think one of the best things to do is a mixed range of skills, because you'll have people there who really, you know, pursue certain things, and then you'll have someone there who, could, you know, over the course of a week could catch a lot of bonefish and learn an awful lot very quickly. And that in itself is a really fun thing to be part of, somebody's learning experience.
Okay, and the local people, good people? The guys?
Oh, lovely. Yeah, it looks stunning. Just you know, warm-hearted, honest, caring, lovely, lovely people. Okay. I mean, we, you know, the whole Pacific is full of wonderful people, and Kiribati is no exception. And, you know, they're deeply appreciative of us being there. We're bringing jobs and, as I say, you know, there's this sort of neat history with the years, the American anglers particularly have been going there, so it really feels like a very cool place to go in terms of saltwater fly fishing.
one can tell. Oh, yeah, I'm the great pretender.